The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of this station, JVC Broadcasting Management, or its sponsors.
And now, it's time for Radio Jobline with your host, Scott Possessor, right here on 103.9 LI News Radio.
Welcome, everybody. It must be Saturday afternoon. We're here to talk about your career. We're here to talk to you about how to be great at interviewing, how to plan your career, how to plan your retirement, how to help your small business. There's very few things we don't do here on Radio Jobline connected to the business community. One of the sub-themes that we have here on Radio Jobline is one that's very close to my heart. I have a lot of friends associated with this. And we try to keep a level playing field here on Radio Jobline so that when people with disabilities or people that are suffering from any kind of condition that would make them a little bit less of a good job candidate than someone else, we're here to help them. We reach out. We've had so many organizations on the show over the 30 years we've been on radio and television. And this is, today we have a great one. DDI is going to join us. Development and NIAID is here with us. Let's get the information from Paige. Welcome, Paige, and tell us who's on the show today.
Thank you, Scott. We have not only one, but two fabulous men here today. Russell Snaith is with us, founding member of New York Alliance for Developmental Disabilities, otherwise known as NIAID. He is also the chairman of the Board for Developmental Disabilities Institute, and he is a very proud parent of a child with autism. For a little background, New York Alliance for Developmental Disabilities and DDI are the largest advocacy group in New York State for people with autism and other developmental disabilities, with nearly 7,000 members statewide. DDI is a nonprofit provider of programs and services to children and adults with autism and other developmental disabilities, serves over 1,500 families across Long Island. And Chris Brady is also here with us today. He is the recruitment manager for DDI, and he's been with DDI for close to 7 years, working with all things recruitment and training roles for the organization.
So if, as you listen to the show today, if you're moved or touched by what we're saying, and you're looking for a job, and you're one of those many, many, many people that was getting that extra unemployment money, and you certainly find it, you suddenly find the need to go back to work, but you don't know where to go. The industry that you were in has failed. Maybe you worked for a restaurant that's no longer around, did bar mitzvahs. There's no more bar mitzvahs. So maybe you're looking for a job. And if so, DDI has jobs open. And they're wonderful, noble jobs to do. And we'll talk all about them as we get into the show. Let me start with something that may come as a surprise. I don't want to just talk about the illness of autism. I want to talk about the person that has autism. What do they go through? What is the suffering? Is it what people say? Is it how people act toward them? Is it because they're incapable of maybe driving or getting a good job that might be beneficial to the economy and to everybody? I want to know what people with autism go through. What is their life like?
Yeah, sure, Scott. So since I'm the father of a young 25-year-old man with severe autism, I have seen the world through his eyes as his father. And I would say that the world can be very different, scary, and challenging and frustrating at times, that the autistic person sees things differently and absorbs and processes things different from a sensory standpoint in terms of noise or light and crowds. So things that we may take for granted or that are very orderly and comfortable for us, where there's a lot of people or let's say there's some uncertainty or changes, we all accept some degree of change in our lives, curveballs, change of plans, change of structures and routines. The individual with autism and the way they see things through their eyes is they're very structured and pattern-driven. In some cases, they're very brilliant. In other cases, they are lower functioning. But many of them rely heavily on routine, consistency, and predictability. And if something throws them off, like somebody cuts in front of you at a grocery line, or a car changes, or you go a different way to school, these things could cause anxiety. They could cause frustrations, disappointments, and outbursts and anger. And it takes a lot of understanding, knowledge of the drivers and triggers for these, and a lot of skill and patience to be able to work with these individuals.
So you're a father of an autistic person, 25 years old, and like you said, you're seeing it from his eyes. Tell me about your life, Russell. How does it affect you as he was growing up? Mm-hmm. And some of the kids were on the baseball team, and some of the kids were, you know, going to debates class or chess, you know, whatever, or some things that maybe he wasn't capable of doing at that time. You know, how did that make him feel? How did it make you feel?
Well, it certainly made me feel, first and foremost, very sad, I guess. Like, it felt like a feeling of loss that he didn't have the capabilities or opportunities as everybody else in some cases. In some cases, it's pure ability or skills to do certain things. In other cases, there weren't opportunities. There were modified softball or little leagues like Challenger baseball and programs, soccer in our community that really adapted. But as a parent, I would always parity check, and you look at other children and families and see the things that they do and the ease with which they can do them. I think, you know, as a parent, it's just always there's this angst and struggle between, you know, wanting to bridge that gap, you know, and sometimes you realize that you can't do it, and it's a matter of doing the best you can, accommodating and adapting. But I think for me, the lifelong pursuit and the goal is to bridge the gap, yeah, and to make him be able to do anything he wants.
I remember when I was very young, I was bullied. And I wasn't all that abnormal. I was pretty close to normal, but I was still bullied. And bullying was fairly common when I was a young person. I can imagine the horrible things that the people with autism have to hear from stupid young elementary school and middle school kids that don't know what they're talking about, whose parents have not guided them on how to deal with people that are different. You know, I mean, just being different alone, it doesn't matter what the difference is, it can be very, very painful ride. How do you deal with that?
Yeah, I think that one of the biggest things that I would point out is when people stare, you know, if you're a child, if you're out in public or you're working with your child as a staff member or a parent and you're out in public in a restaurant, and you know, if the individual is acting up a little bit, maybe a little louder, maybe flapping their arms or doing something that is just a little discordant with the rest of the people around them, you get the stares, mm-hmm, and people looking. And I think one time I said to somebody, you know, why don't you just take a picture? It'll last longer, you know, I tend to be very defensive. And I think there's, you know, the autistic developmental disability parents call themselves mama bears, papa bears, like, mm-hmm, you know, don't mess with them. Don't put their child down. Don't make fun. Don't bully or belittle. And there is a lot of insensitivity out there. And I think a show like this, and, you know, kudos to you, Scott and Paige for doing this, and Chris here, to bring awareness and level the playing field, because, you know, we talk about diversity and inclusion today, and I don't want this population to be left behind. You know, there's a lot of populations out there that, you know, are loud, and some of these individuals with autism and other developmental disabilities, they're nonverbal, they don't have a voice, they can't speak. And I'm that voice, we're that voice for them. They can speak and communicate in other ways, but maybe not verbally. God gave me a voice and made me a parent of my sons, and my voice is loud and clear, and we have to advocate and defend their rights and make sure they're included in things in society.
Mm. And I can only tell you that I would be the wrong kind of parent for this, because I have a temper, and if you mess with my West Highland Terrier, I'll kill you. Imagine it would be with my son. So I completely respect and admire you for being such a great dad and for doing all the things you've done with a child with disabilities, because it makes more sense for you, Russell, than anybody. And so kudos to you. Kudos to you. Chris, let's talk a little bit to you about Developmental Disabilities Institute. I think a lot of people know the name. It's probably one of the best known of all of the agencies that support people with disabilities. Tell us about the size and scope of what you guys do.
Well, yeah, so we are the largest provider of services for individuals with autism on Long Island. So we supported, like, you know, like we said before, about 1,500 employees, 1,500 individuals across our many different programs. I do want to add that I am also the step parent of a wonderful 8-year-old boy who is on the spectrum. He is amazing, but, you know, as Russell had mentioned, it's, you know, you have those moments of just mind your business. And it's hard, you know, it's difficult. And, you know, he came into my life while I was already at DDI. And that was, you know, it was an eye-opening moment. And it just shows that even though that was my passion before that happened, it just gives that extra drive to, you know, make sure that, you know, people need support. We all need support in some fashion. Mm-hmm. And the work that DDI does, whether it's with our early childhood programs, early intervention, going up through adult day programs, you know, people who are 60, 70, even 80 years old, you know, still receiving services and getting the supports that allow for an ever-growing base of knowledge and opportunities for learning and development. You know, learning doesn't stop at 16, 18, 22 years old, you know, and even if it's small accomplishment, tying shoelaces, or a larger accomplishment, getting, you know, full-time employment, those are the types of supports that DDI offers to the people within our programs.
Okay. So you kind of, it sounds like you're serving all age groups and all various levels of severity, right? And perhaps you could tell us, is it classroom style training or learning? I mean, give us an idea. What does it look like?
Well, you know, obviously depending on your age range. So we offer early intervention services for, you know, 2, 3, 4 years old, early childhood services, which, you know, range from anywhere 4 to 6, 7 years old, depending on, you know, what goals are met during that time frame in our, you know, 3 early childhood centers, Medford, Ronkonkoma, and Huntington. You know, the goal is to get those students into a public school environment. And we, you know, we have a fantastic success rate with placing students in a public school. But there are students that need additional supports and they will then go into one of our children's day programs. You know, we serve what would be, you know, not the typical classroom environment, but, you know, we offer instruction and everything that we do is centered around, you know, activities of daily living. It's what you need in order to, you know, function the best way that you can within society. And, you know, the challenge is even not working hands-on with the people that we're supporting. When you see that person, I mean, I've been at DDI for close to 7 years. I've seen children come through the school building where I work. And the progress is incredible. And that's just a real thanks to the people who invest their time and efforts into ensuring that, you know, these individuals, these students are not left behind as they might be in a different environment.
All right. So I don't mean to put either of you guys on the spot, but there must be a wonderful success story in here somewhere where you were able to take somebody who suffered from severe autism and never thought that they would wind up in a better place, and maybe you did through the help that you provided and the services that you give. Is there a great success story in there somewhere?
We've had DDI has had one individual that's gone on to a community college. There's many cases where individuals integrate and mainstream into the public school. Mm-hmm. They get jobs and supported employment positions. So, you know, considering DDI is servicing a lot of the more challenging and complex behaviors and needs, there's a high hill to climb in a lot of cases, but the success stories are really impressive and humbling when you see them have jobs and go on to higher education and, you know, do things in the community. It could be, you know, setting tables in Applebee's. It could be stocking shelves in a store, recycling bottles, you know, bringing them to recycling. So You know, in my particular case with Scott, I mean, my success story is with my son, Dylan. You know, he has had severe to profound autism. And I will just say point blank, DDI saved our family in terms of the challenges and dynamics that we were experiencing. So when I look back from 11 years to now, the success story with Dylan is that he's a 25-year-old young man who's living independently in a group home with his peers, goes to a day program, goes out into the community, is independent and separate to some extent now from his family and has established a balance. And his behaviors are much more mitigated and under control than they were. He's more compliant and directable than he had been before. And has gained socialization skills, community integration skills, does some chores around the house. So there's bigger success stories, you know, when individuals go to a community college or they hold down a job in Target. But for me, just personally, you know, with that success story, that's huge. It's everything because I saw it firsthand. Our family was in crisis with two people trying to work and a sibling that he had that, you know, there were safety concerns in the house, there were behaviors, and there were a lot of issues and unpredictability. So when DDI came along and Dylan started receiving services and, you know, whether it was school age, residential, adult day services, and community outings, and they took him on trips and vacations, we started seeing tremendous changes in him in terms of, you know, assimilating and interacting with others and not being so tied to us. So that was a huge success story that just carries forward, and that was all because of DDI.
Fantastic. Tell us a little bit more about NIAID.
So NIAID is the New York Alliance for Developmental Disabilities. And that group was formed in 2020. Actually, it spawned out of the pandemic. It was a grassroots group that I started when we saw that this population was really being overlooked by the state of New York. They were not included in an unpause phase, and they were in an indefinite lockdown. So this group was formed to advocate across the state, and it went from 0 to 7,000 members pretty quickly. And we were very active in advocating for easing of restrictions and inclusion, you know, whether it's testing, it's vaccinations, it's funding for their programs and services, and just their rights and inclusion. So NIAID is grassroots. It's all volunteers. It's a family advocacy group. We have folks that run the gamut in NIAID, from speech therapists to direct care workers to parents to people that work in agencies of the state. And this is the largest group in the state. I envision it being 10,000 and then 25,000. And it's going to have a real say in policy in New York State and elected official seats. And this is all about advocating for the rights and wellness of individuals with developmental disabilities. They need a voice. And the ticket for them is going to be prioritization when it comes to funding and the budget. Because, you know, I've told state officials, including the governor, that don't tell me that this is about money. This is not about money. This is about priorities. This is about how you spend the money you got. So don't tell me you don't have money to take care of my son who can't care for himself. The most honorable and noble thing that you can do is to care for those who can't do it all themselves.
Right.
And we have that as an obligation as a state and as a people. And that's why NIAID was born, is because that wasn't getting done, and it wasn't getting loud enough, and it wasn't getting big enough, because for the last 10 years, the New York State administration has underfunded and cut programs. And now we're turning the corner and seeing some changes to that.
Well, all great stuff. Really amazing stuff. You know, it's funny. We should share with people how we met. You had reached out to me on LinkedIn, I believe, where everybody reaches out to me. And by the way, everybody that's listening, you should be connected with me on LinkedIn, because we post every show that we record here in LI News Radio. Once it's aired, we post it on my page. So connect with me, Scott Possessor. But you were telling me about a shortage, you know, of people and you couldn't find people to do the direct care type of work. Now, how has that changed?
So this has been a nationwide and a statewide issue in terms of workforce shortages due to extended unemployment benefits and the pandemic. And then in other cases, a rising minimum wage is closing the gap between jobs that are above minimum wage jobs that require more training and skills where the minimum wage is rising, but those were not rising because the funding for a job like a direct care worker, direct support professional, is set by a rate that is set by New York State, the Office for People with Developmental Disabilities, which part of that comes from Medicaid and federal dollars, part of it comes from state dollars. But OPWDD sets the rate that an agency can pay. So, you know, companies can just change, they can dig into their profit margin or they can adjust it. Chipotle can raise their minimum, you know, their pay. Mm-hmm. Where the challenge here is that, you know, to raise the pay. So we've gotten some federal stimulus money and we've done certain things that, you know, around sign-on bonuses, retention bonuses, bonuses for hours worked, and actual increases in hourly rates that have come from some federal stimulus money and relief out of COVID and the American Rescue Act.
We're going to put a bookmark right here. We got a news break coming up. You're listening to Radio Jobline with Scott Possessor and Paige Meyer, super intern. We will hear for you every week. If you have an idea, I would like your topic featured here on Radio Jobline. You can write to me, scottp118@gmail.com, or you can write to Paige.
PaigeCMeyer50@gmail.com.
That's spelled M-E-Y-E-R?
Yep, PaigeCMeyer50.
And we'll be happy to have your topic here on the radio program. We're going to talk a lot more about autism and its impact and what can be done to help people with the illness. Stay with us, everybody. Roll away.
And now, welcome back to Radio Jobline with your host, Scott Possessor, right here on LI News Radio.
Hello and welcome back to Radio Jobline. Tonight we have Russell Snaith with us as well as Chris Brady, the one and only Scott Possessor, and I am Paige Meyer. Before we get back into our lovely guests, we just have to get ready for some business. So going after the customer of tomorrow, BizShout. Socially promote yourself or your business is the next generation platform for promoting and advertising that offers people and brands a new business casual culture. This new collaboration will feature maximizing content across several platforms with the freedom to reach and stretch conversations, careers, and prosperity through unique shouts. For their first add-on service, they designed a creative resume to help job seekers potentially land their dream job 5 times faster. This is achieved by showcasing elevator pitches on chemistry, job-related demonstration videos, and blogging to further prove their value. Additionally, candidates can be discovered in a targeted database for free. Joining BizShout and designing a creative resume are also free at bizshout.com, spelt with 2 Z's. Build one today to land your dream job.
And we recommend BizShout very strongly to everybody that's looking for a job. And a shout out to our buddy Charlie Lee. Russ, I want to, and Chris, I want to get back to what we were talking about just before the break. We were starting to talk about people that help folks with disabilities and the shortage that we experienced there for a little while that made everybody panic there for a bit, that we didn't have enough direct care workers. So, Chris, if you could take the mic and talk to the audience. There are people out there listening to the show right now that don't have a job. Don't know where to go for a job. They were in hospitality and the restaurants failed. And yes, the hospitality industry has come back somewhat, but many people have fallen out of that business. And they have a lot of good people skills and a lot of things to recommend them. So they're looking for jobs. Other people are looking for jobs. Retired engineers are looking for jobs. I mean, you got everything on Long Island. So talk to them and tell us how we can get involved with DDI.
Well, it's funny that you mentioned that, Scott, because, you know, working in the recruitment function for so long, you know, people always ask, like, what do I need to work at DDI? What do I need? I'll go to colleges, job fairs, you know, people calling. And it's like, you need 3 things. You need patience, passion, and persistence. If you have those 3 things, you will succeed. You know, we actually love having people who've worked in retail, worked in the hospitality industry, because we know that they have patience. Because the things that you have to do in those types of roles, I mean, would you rather do it to make some customer who will never think about you again happy? Or would you rather perform a service to somebody who absolutely needs that support? So, you know, we're not anything that, you know, basic requirements to come into one of our programs, working in a direct care role, working as a teaching assistant. It is that patience. You have to have that personality where you want to do good. You can every day you can leave work and say, I made a difference. Mm-hmm. And you can't do that in a lot of lines of work. There's not always that opportunity.
Yeah.
And, working at DDI, I mean, we have sites from Riverhead in the east through North Belmore in the west, about 48 sites altogether, providing various services. So, www.ddiny.org, that would be the place to apply. You can see all of our job listings, locations, hours, and we're 24/7 in our residential program. So that weekend that you want to work.
If you need to night at night or something, you're a night bird?
Yeah, overnights, mm-hmm. mornings, evenings, afternoons, full-time, part-time, per diem. There's always an opportunity, whether it's to make it a career, whether it's to make a few dollars on the side. All of your efforts and abilities go into supporting, multiple people and helping them just live in the world.
Mm. Very, very good. Now, please give the website one more time.
Sure. That's www.ddiny.org.
Okay. What about contributors, sponsors, people that give money to the organization? Give your pitch for that.
Well, obviously, we're always looking for funding sources. Obviously, Russell had mentioned some of the stimulus money that had come in and how funding is, rationed out, for lack of a better term, from the state and from other bodies. But our fundraising efforts, while they can't necessarily translate into wages for our workforce, because they're not always consistent, right? We need to be sure we have a consistent funding source for that. What they do is they help improve the lives of the people that we're supporting greatly. Mm-hmm. Whether it's, for example, at the building I work, we have a golf course that was installed for our children's residential program. We can kind of have a little mini golf environment, mm-hmm. Which, especially during the pandemic when everything was shut down and our individuals could not go and enjoy these recreational activities. Mm-hmm. Whether it's sponsoring a playground for one of our early childhood programs, whether it's, providing some sort of either one-time or monthly contribution that goes into renovating buildings, it goes into technology, virtual reality, it goes into maintaining our vehicle fleet. It's, DDI will use the money for a good cause. Mm-hmm. And any fundraising, it goes really into supporting our people.
Are you looking for fundraisers too?
Well, actually, we are looking for a development assistant to help with our fundraising tasks. That's one of the jobs you can apply for on ddiny.org. Mm-hmm. We're always looking for, different funding sources, again, whether it's financial, whether it's even something, we'll take stocks, we'll take real estate. If anybody's donating some real estate, that's always something that's useful, as are the population of people that need these supports. They're always growing.
Do you get any support from the political arena?
We do. We get a lot of support from elected officials in the Assembly, the Senate, and the legislature in on Long Island, in terms of supporting the housing options, especially in Little Plains and Greenlawn. We had the Huntington Town Board support that. We have some elected officials in the New York State Legislature that have individuals and children that are affected, or family members or neighbors, and they support the field of human services and DDI and agencies like DDI in big ways when it comes to legislation and policy. And the legislation certainly is around safety, wellness, rights. And then when it comes to the budget, they pile on and we advocate with them in NIAID. NIAID works very closely with elected officials, Tom Abernathy, Missy Miller, John Mannion, to name a few and get their names out there. People know them, but they need to be credited for what they do. Mm. And they set the tone, and we get our 7,000 people behind them. And then they have a base. So it takes a village and a community to advocate and to push for higher wages and an emphasis on this.
Okay. Fascinating stuff. You know, a lot of people perhaps listening now, if they're as old as me or younger, they may have seen the movie Rain Man. And I remember being struck in that movie by what a fabulous job Dustin Hoffman did, showing how the pace of what he was doing and speaking and or not speaking or whatever. And I was kind of touched by his performance. And then when the gambling part of it came around and he was remembering all these numbers, I said to myself, one of these days I have to ask the question, are they really that smart? Are they gifted? You know, can they memorize a phone book? You know, like people say they can. Is this a reality?
Yeah, it is, Scott. I mean, you may see people out there in your everyday life that you don't even know have autism, you know, and many folks, if not all, don't want to be labeled as such, or some others are, and they're very proud of it. And it's a diversity. It's just a difference that should be valued and cherished. But there is such a wide range of functioning out there in society. And, you know, Rain Man and some of these other movies and shows focus on higher functioning because they're a little bit, you know, more intriguing in terms of the lower functioning, which can be challenging and, you know, a difficult road to hoe. But Rain Man and, you know, cases where I've seen a young boy of a colleague of mine play Piano Man by Billy Joel on the piano and just kill it, where I can barely play a few chops on the piano, and is a five or 6 year old boy who probably never studied music or anything, just sat in front of the piano and belted it out.
Wow.
And you know, somebody else might study that or practice it for 2 years to get it down the way he got it down. So it's the brain chemistry, it's the way you wire it and the way things signals and things around you are interpreted, and what they see and feel. They see and feel things differently, and in some cases, God, it makes them really, really gifted. And we should harness that and leverage it in society and cherish it. There's senators, there's elected officials, there's leaders of companies that have autism. Mm. So there's really no barriers, there's no boundaries there. You just have to utilize all that they have. On the lower functioning side, there's potential also. And I just like to look at everything as relative. It's relative to where you're starting, and it's relative to what's in your toolbox. And, you know, and if you're starting at a very tough place, if you get, you know, to the point where I can button my shirt, that might be a huge victory. Mm. You know, if you're starting at a better point and you can play Piano Man right now, but tomorrow you learn Stay Away to Heaven, well, that may be a big victory for you relative to where you started and what your skills are. But if you can learn how to button your shirt or tie your shoe because you couldn't do that in the past, that could be just something to celebrate, like by doing a backflip, you know?
Yeah, very touching. I wondered, guys, let me ask you, I'm curious now, is there a pharmacological solution here too? Are there meds? Are there drugs? Are these drugs developing, improving? Are they making a difference? Are we there yet? You know, is there something that people with autism take to ameliorate the situation?
Yeah, so Scott, there's a few angles, lines of defense here. So there's certainly, you know, cognitive, behavioral therapies and treatments, and they need to be often supplemented by meds, different medicines. And oftentimes, you know, we talk about the terms anxiety, frustrations, depression, sadness, meltdowns, tantrums, and some of these individuals have OCD. You know, they're very OCD, and they want to control their environment. And if they can't control their environment, it creates anxiety that then creates behaviors. So there are medications that are like, you know, anti-anxiety, anti-OCD. These would be like, you know, benzodiazepines, and then there's other medications too. And they're really designed not to turn the person into a zombie, but just to take the edge off so that they're a little bit more tolerant of changes and don't like overreact, that they stay in a lane. And you know, if medicines, if they're done right, they can actually really enable the person to be more attentive and get the most out of their abilities, as opposed to them getting saddled up with behaviors and frustrations, doing property damage, self-injurious behaviors. So, you know, you avoid medications because they have side effects, but medications are prevalent, and they really are very effective in many cases.
All right, now, you had mentioned, we were talking about Rain Man for a moment, we're going to get off that subject, but you did mention that there was a show on Netflix that you think is worth watching. What's the name of that show?
Oh, yeah, Atypical. I would highly recommend Atypical. to get a glimpse into the life of a young man with autism who's higher functioning, who's in a family context, who has a sibling and two parents, and the dynamics of the classmates, and then he gets into romance with a girl who has autism. And if you really want to see relationships with autistic individuals and how do they work, are they possible? Yes, they are. And they can be very fruitful and very beautiful. And it kind of shows you the ups and downs, you know, of the life. And somebody like myself, who's a father, we looked at that and we said, geez, that's our family for the most part. But I would definitely give it a look if you, it's authentic. It's really true to life.
And Chris, you had one too.
Yeah, there was actually a great movie that we, you know, back in the day when we could all get together in public places, we used to do a film forum at DDI. And, you know, we'd have a, you know, a series of three or four movies over the course of a few months. And one of the movies that we had shown that was especially touching was a movie called Autism in Love, and follows the stories of three people on the autism spectrum, whether they were looking for love or how they are, you know, the heartache associated with trying to find love, the complications that come from the that really sort, not, I wouldn't say inability to communicate, but not being able to express your inner self in the same way that somebody else could, and also kind of dealing with the heartache of losing a loved one. It was a very touching movie, and you know, it shows that there is one, of course, somebody for everybody, and you know, what you see, it's, you know, just because we always say, like, just because somebody is, you know, on the autism spectrum, it does not mean they don't have the same wants, desires, needs as everyone else. It's just a matter of expressing and how we express that to each other and to the world in general. But it's a great movie that will bring a tear to everybody's eyes.
And Autism in Love.
Autism in Love, yes.
Okay. And I wanted to ask you about what NIAID needs. You know, is there something we can help you with? Are you recruiting for people, for workers, for anything in particular, sponsors, anything?
Yeah, well, absolutely, Scott. We're always recruiting for members. It's a volunteer organization. We're grassroots, 7,000 people across New York State, very heavy concentration in lower state, downstate New York City, Long Island, Westchester, Mid-Hudson. We are looking for any stakeholder, parent, practitioners. We have elected officials. We have the press, the media. We have a very strong media base that takes up stories for us to join NIAID. You just go to our Facebook page and you just search for NIAID and it'll come up. There's also a website that's NIAIDcares.org, NIAIDcares.org. And we have a structure of founding members like myself, and then we have regional leads. We have regional leaders on Long Island, New York City, upstate, Westchester, New York, capital, Western New York, Southern Tier. So if you're interested in advocating and being a stakeholder and fighting for increased pay and wages for the work that these individuals do, for protecting their rights, for making sure they're included more in society and have more opportunities, NIAID is the place for you. We would welcome you with open arms, and we need to really gear up for the next year budget cycle in New York State, and we're going to be working with elected officials for that and be very loud and very clear and respectful in Albany with what we're asking for. And we're asking for higher pay for direct care workers and staff at developmental disabilities and their sister agencies. The demand is increasing for these services. And I'll just say one thing, you know, that the work that these folks do, I mean, if I think about when you do something nice, a good deed for somebody, you hold the door open, you help them carry a bag of groceries. Think about the feeling when you let somebody in on the road, right? How does that happen? But think about the feeling you get from doing that. They say courtesy is contagious. Imagine the feeling you would get by helping somebody or other people who couldn't do it all themselves all day. Imagine the feeling you would take away at night and looking back on your career, that you did that every day, whether you helped them get changed, you fed them, you gave them medications, you took them out to play mini golf. I feel really great if I do, you know, people say do one act of kindness a day, you know, let somebody in, wave to somebody, open a door. Imagine if you did that all day for people who just can't do it themselves because they, you know, they are vulnerable and they need that assistance. And you're in a position to do that for them. And, you know, whatever I've done in my career, you know, people say I'm the chairman of the board, and I honor that position. I'm privileged to do that. But I respect, and the staff respects me, and people say, oh, Mr. Snape, thank you. I say, no, I respect you for what you do. You're hero is a cliche, and it's overused, but they are my hero. And I really admire what they do, and that's a big thing you can take away from doing a job like this.
Mm. Okay, one more time. I want you to give us your website.
Yes.
And that's all we need for now, just the website.
www.nyadcares.org.
Okay. Do you also have open jobs?
They're just all volunteer. We have open positions for regional leads, okay. Certainly, if you're interested in being a regional lead. And the role of a regional lead is to be a presence on the ground in terms of media appearances, working with elected officials, working at public rallies, organizing events, and building membership and being a support person. So a regional lead, you know, we generally have about 20 to 30 of them, and there's a few openings at any given time, is a person who is more, you know, in the inner fabric and circle of the leadership of NIAID, and driving the strategy and planning the course of action. And then there's the drive, Scott, for members, members at large. So, you know, it's like I said, it's all volunteer. We volunteer our time. We provide different things like skills and expertise. But the key word, the only criteria that you need is passion. Mm-hmm. If you have passion and you want to fight the fight, because it is a fight. You know, we're fighting for money with, you know, again, the teachers union, the police, the fire, the sanitation, and they all deserve their money. They all deserve great pay. Mm-hmm. But we deserve our share, too.
Yeah.
And we need to be as loud, and we need to be as prominent, and we need to be a priority in Albany with that. So if you want for us to be a priority to pay direct support professionals and fund the human services, then NIAID is the place to be. Largest family advocacy group in New York State, 7,000 people in 1 year. It'll be 10,000, it'll be 25,000. And the bigger we get, the more notice we get from elected officials in the media. We get news stories and we get time with elected officials.
Well, you have a voice on this show, Russ.
Appreciate it,
anytime
Scott.
You need it. If you have something upcoming you want to promote, same goes for DDI. Come on, we'll give you a voice. We'll put it out on LinkedIn as well, and we'll make sure people pay attention. Give me one more time, real quick, your website.
www.ddiny.org.
Okay, and they definitely have jobs, folks. If you're looking for jobs. Okay, you've been listening to Radio Jobline with Scott Possessor and super intern Paige Meyer. Thank you so much, Russell, for being here. You did a great job, and Chris Brady, fantastic. I hope I'll see you again. If you have an idea for Radio Jobline, you can write to me, scottp118@gmail.com, or you can write to Paige.
PaigeCMeyer50@gmail.com.
She's much nicer than me, so you might want to try her first. We'll be back next week with another show. And again, we're here to help, and I'm really happy that we had this show today. Happy hunting, everybody.
The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of this station, JVC Broadcasting Management, or its sponsors.